Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
What most people think.
Hello and welcome to episode 51 of What Most People Think. It's me, it's just me this week. Is that all right? Is that all right with you? I thought we needed a catch-up after the grand scale nature of episode 50 with David Baddiel. Thank you so much for all the feedback from that. I'm glad that people enjoyed it. I was lucky to get him as a guest. Are you kissing David Baddiel's ass again, Jeff? Yeah, I think I still am. He's my mate. I kept calling him my mate. And, you know, if you keep saying something, it might be true. 9 inches. 9 inches. Anyway, welcome to the show, What Most People Think. I'm back off holiday and I've suddenly gone fucking really loud here. I've just gone very close to the microphone because I'm in my new office. And I haven't built, not basically I built some shelves and moved rooms, but it's a bit echoey. I don't know what to do about that for now. It's all costing money, as do holidays. Well, I've just come back off a holiday. I went to Bournemouth, mate. And I was very refreshed, actually. It was only like a 3.5 day trip down there. But, you know, I was supposed to be going to Ibiza. And then I paid way over the odds for a hotel with an outdoor pool. And it rained. Laugh it up. It's funny, isn't it? When other people go on holiday immediately after a heat wave and then it rains. It didn't rain the whole time. Do you know what? There's something to be said, man. There's something to be said for when the weather is predicted to be like 100% shit and then it's only like 70% shit. And we had a couple of days where the sun came out. And my God, it's such a sight, isn't it? Just seeing British people just sprinting downstairs with inflatables under each arm. Come on, kids, get by the pool. Just to just be in sunlight for like approximately 12 minutes. But we did, and we treasured those things. It felt more like holidays of my childhood, really, was just being excessively grateful for minor good things. But this is a show. If this is the first time you listen, it's called What Most People Think. And, you know, just try and come at life, politics and social discourse from the revolutionary angle of commonly held viewpoints that you don't normally hear in comedy. Here's one, is that maybe the moment that you don't actually make kids sit exams, there's going to be problems no matter what you do. Even if you go with the algorithm, not with the algorithm, teachers' predictions, there's going to be problems. So maybe we shouldn't have locked down the schools. Just saying. Hashtag Captain Hindsight. I'm being like fucking Keir Starmer now, aren't I? Keir Starmer, minnos in amnigogoagablea. I just have to keep that going because I need to know that people have listened to the podcast for a while, that every time you hear his voice, you're hearing that sound. And I think also what I just did may well have been cultural appropriation there, doing a sort of West Indian dancehall, sort of soca type voice, I think they're called. But yeah, patrons. I have a Patreon for this podcast. If you're really into it and you want to keep it weekly and ad-free. And also, can I tell you something, right? So last week, I got David Baddiel. Well, I actually had another person lined up as a celebrity guest as well. So I was going to record 2 in a week. That fell through. And then David Baddiel was free. And then my laptop fundamentally shat itself. And so I had to go to... I basically bought a new laptop. So what I'm saying is, if you're wondering what the Patreon is for, it's now keeping it weekly, ad-free, and stopping the bailiffs coming because I suddenly had to buy a new MacBook Pro and it's a piece of shit. It's a piece of shit. The 2020 MacBook Pro, if you're listening, Apple, how have you made it so much worse? Like, you've taken away USB ports because, yeah, who still uses those, right? Oh, we've come up with our own little thing which needs like a fucking 15 quid adapter. We've made the camera more shit. We've made the fan louder. And now, and just then, GarageBand just interrupted me and asked me if I wanted a certain setting on. You know what, GarageBand? I'll let you know piece of shit. Anyway, so I'm really frustrated about that. But more grateful than ever for my new £10 patrons, Ashley Barrett. It's kind of gender non-specific, Ashley. Does he have a dick? Does he have tits? Does it matter, guys? Does it matter? And Maria, who upgraded. Maybe there's something in the David Baddiel podcast. She went, you know what? £5 just didn't feel like enough. So she upgraded to £10. And, well, I've got to do some sort of joke around her voice. Her name, I'm sorry. Maria. I just got 10 quid off Maria. Yeah. Look, I know that you've probably heard that joke a lot in your life, Maria, but maybe not in exactly that context. If you're interested in the cuss count, so we do a weekly roundup of the swear tally from the previous week. It's interesting. So my swearing was down. Four arses, two bullshits, one clusterfuck. That was a word rather than me just being bad at my job. Five fucks, only 11 fuckings. That's dramatically down. One piss, four shits, one twat, and one wank stain. Is that the first appearance for wank stain? You know, like on the National Lottery when they get the balls out and making its first appearance on the National Lottery draw, it's wank stain. And as a bonus for cuss fans, David Baddiel had one bollocks, one cunt, four fucked, one fucked, seven fucking. So like me, he favours fucking as his swear word of choice. One pissed and five shits. I think that for a guest, he's now like on the Top Gear leaderboard of swearsies. I think the lowest ever was Pierre Novelli, who barely swore at all because he just doesn't need to. He's got so many words, but afraid not me. Not me. Just quick thank you and a fuck you. I think I've already done the fuck you, really, with the MacBook Pro 22. What is it Pro at? Can I ask you that, Apple? What is it doing better than it was before? It's like if humans suddenly lost opposable thumbs. That's what you've done with your product. Rubbish. Anyway, a thank you. My holiday, I went to Poulton's theme park. And this isn't a paid for advert for Poulton's, the theme park on the South Coast that's clean, organised and COVID. It was really good. How have I not heard about this place called Poulton's? It's a shit name. Do you know what I mean? When it comes to theme parks, what you really want is you want something that implies fun. Like, do you remember the one in Margate? Benbon Brothers. I mean, it's kind of a bit tired, but sounded fun, didn't it? Thorpe Park? Yeah. Alton Towers? Poulton sounds like a sort of hardware place, sort of place that you'd hire like a pressure cleaner before you could get them for £7 from B&Q. But it was really good, man. Peppa Pig World. I mean, like, my son really likes Peppa Pig World. I've got to say, me and my wife both got a bit of an issue with Peppa. I don't know how you feel about this. She's a little bit precocious. But yeah, thank you to Poulton's. That was good. That was good. I recommend it if you haven't been. And a fuck you to Bournemouth Seafront. £4 for seafront chips. So we got it in our head that we were going to have chips out of a comb, right? You know that feeling in life that it's not. We already knew that it's not going to really match up to what we were hoping. But we thought, all right, £4. So I paid it. So it's I'm the idiot, basically. And you know what the worst thing about it was? Was they weren't even like chip shop chips. They were those kind of like oven-y ones. They were too crisp. I wanted it to be greasy. Do you know what I mean? I wanted chips. And I know businesses haven't been able to open. And I know that they're trying to make up for lost time. But £4 chips. And what are you saying? What's that, Jeff? What, if you was there again tomorrow, would you do the same? Yeah, in fact, I would. Okay, so in my animated anger there, I haven't actually teased what's coming up in the show. So we'll just start with the first subject, shall we? We're going to talk later in the show about satirical online comedy accounts getting frozen out. But first up, we're going to talk about the exams. And, it's all calming down a little bit now. Although, as I speak, they've said that the BTECs won't be out till next week. And that's arguably the most BTEC thing that's ever happened. BTEC lot... BTEC, they're probably the first ones to finish school term, aren't they? They're just the teachers like, I can't be asked to do the BTEC. We forgot to mark it. It's BTEC. But they're going to be not going to be out till next week. And the press have been doing this thing where the press are always very keen. Whatever's happening with young people, the press have always got to be super sympathetic to young people. Because obviously young people are completely innocent of anything. And I'm going to say, look, I don't think it's bad, that they've got to wait another week for the BTECs. But we've, life's been different for a lot of things because of COVID. I think waiting another week for a BTEC where your teacher is almost certainly going to have pumped up your grade for fucking exams you didn't have to sit. An extra week, is it going to break the bank? I don't know. Am I being mean here? Look, the truth of the matter is that the government's handling of it was I mean, it was always going to be a difficult thing, right? It was always going to be a difficult thing. Once you didn't sit the exams to just pluck these exam grades out of your bum and just say, I think... I mean, what power that was to give teachers. If there's one thing I would have got back into teaching for was just to have that power, just that little shit. Do you know what I mean? That cocky one that looks like he knows everything. Go, oh, now he's got the power. Oh, do I get to decide your exam grade? Oh, yeah, was that you calling me Mr. No-Cock for 4 straight years? Well, that's funny. Well, that A seems to have slipped to a D. So, look, the U-turn, though, was spectacular, right? Because it was just how far off it was obvious that it was going to happen. It was like, right, if the Titanic had set off and then they'd spotted the iceberg, right? If they'd spotted the iceberg whilst they were still in Southampton. And that bloke, you know, because obviously I base it on the film rather than history, but they just went, as they were setting sail, oh, iceberg! And they just went, yeah, that's it, we'll just keep sailing straight towards that. And there was another ship. I mean, if you want this metaphor to be completely secure, the SNP sailed straight into that iceberg like a week before. They go, no, I think we can get around it. So well, it was embarrassing, wasn't it? And I don't know why we didn't have the exams. Why didn't we have the exams? Because they were just suddenly, it was shut everything down, wasn't it? Piers Morgan, all the lockdown freaks, just shit in the bed and wanting everything to be locked down. And one thing that was said time and time again was that locking down schools was the worst thing. You know, that had arguably the most implications for disadvantaged kids, right? It was said at the time, we locked down. We locked down. And I mean, exams are fairly socially distanced, aren't they? I mean, like when I went, my memory of exams is sitting a long way from people and not talking. And entering in exactly the kind of weird COVID-related way that we have to enter everywhere now. Jesus Christ, I was going in Curry's the other day, right? Because I had issues with this fucking laptop, right? And I went there and I just went to the door and this guy like stopped me. And he was like, hi, can I help you? I was like, yeah, I was going to walk in your shop. And he was like, what are you looking for? I was like, I was looking for a webcam. He's like, what kind of webcam? I was like, oh, Logitech, a webcam, a camera for the web. What the, why can't I just come in your shop? It was like it was fucking border patrol. Do you know what I mean? You know when they get a couple coming, you know, the people coming back from Southeast Asia where you know they've either got like illegal shellfish in their bag or heroin. And before anyone says that's racist, I'm doing it based on the show, right? But this guy was treating me like that. And it does come, sorry, I'm going slightly off subject here, but it does come, I know that if you like the COVID restrictions, a lot of people are kind of into it, you know, they find it something reassuring. I bet they're the same sort of people who really like being tucked up in bed, you know, the kind of people like being tucked up to the point where they're almost imprisoned by the duvet. It's fair enough, you're that kind of person, but what is your limit of what we can tolerate in terms of incursions into our civil liberties? Fine, the geezer at Curry's gives me the fifth degree about wanting to buy a webcam. It's weird, right? But what about, you know, in Australia where they've had drones flying overhead to see if they can spot people who aren't wearing masks? I mean, we're, you know, forced vaccines. Now, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I just sort of think, like, there's something kind of Chinese and Russian about just injecting people with stuff, even though they're not fully on board with it. You know, I don't know, because maybe there's too many idiots running out and around with conspiracy theories about vaccines now that maybe you do need different authoritarian laws. But as a libertarian, I just the idea that you fought, this is one of the things with lockdown when it started. This country has a fundamentally different culture, you know. Broadly speaking, people are used to liberty here. If you give people fair rules, they'll broadly abide by them. I mean, the fact that the overall infection numbers haven't gone through the roof, and everyone's going, well, why is this? How could this be? We've had the pubs reopening, we've had VE Day, we've had the beaches, we had the Black Lives Matter protests, we had the statue protests, we had people out, heat waves, beaches. And the truth of the matter is really not difficult, is that most people in Britain follow the guidelines. That's it. There's no kind of like mad kind of mystical science behind this. Most people are all right. But, you know, when you talk about certainly the liberal media, the last thing in the world that they would think is that people en masse have been decent. Unless, of course, the people in question are kids who've taken their GCSEs, in which case they're all angels and they're being failed by this government. Are they being failed? Maybe they are. It is weird. It is weird the degree to which that this is prompted negative press for the Tories, right? And it's been coming from the Daily Mail, the Telegraph, their usual allies. And I wonder if it's because, right, and this is certainly where I was frustrated with the way they handled it as well, right? I'm fairly biased. But is I wonder if it's because the hard things that they've done, there's certainly an argument, okay, the hard things are hard in a pandemic. Politicians at the moment are doing way more politics than they've ever done. You know, a simple week in politics at the moment is probably like 3 months from before. So they're under pressure. But when they do the easy things badly, right, and it was quite easy to see that this exam algorithm was imperfect, yeah, kids have had a tough year, it's imperfect, but give them the fucking, you know what I mean, give them the exam results. It does. We'll always know it as the COVID year. It'll be like, you know, Liverpool winning the league, there'll always be a slight asterisk by it. But we'll go, on the other hand, these kids are, have gone through something that no one else has. You know, on one hand, they might have had a touch. Maybe they were shit at exams and they had a really good relationship with their teacher. Maybe some of them were a bit too close. Where are you going with this shift? I've got no idea. But what I'm saying is the government didn't do the easy thing. And maybe that, because they can't stand being unpopular. They cannot stand being unpopular. This was the odd thing about, you know, when the Tories won the election in December, we were sold this idea that this is going to be this far-right, heartless government. You know, and apart from them digging their heels in over Dominic Cummings, which, again, I was in favour of him. I thought he should have resigned out of decency, not sacked. He should have resigned and then come back at an appropriate point. But they just don't, other than that, they don't like being unpopular. What they do is they think, oh, we're going to dig our heels in over this. And then on school meals, you know, there was a level to which Marcus Rashford got trending that suddenly they reverse course. And the same with exams. They don't want to be unpopular. And you've got this situation where they're not right-wing enough for the right-wingers and the left-wingers still think they're Nazis. They might as well just do what they think is right. You know? But I don't see any chance of that at the moment. And it's weird, right? Because they've got an 80-seat majority. If there is a time to be unpopular, this is the time. If you really think it's the right thing, then just crack on.
What most people think.
One thing that makes me laugh, right, is the amount of social people on social media now, that when the Tories have a couple of bad weeks, and they go, I'm sorry, okay, look, I'm sorry, but if you voted Conservative, I don't know how you could defend your vote given what's happening, right? So one, they're doing the Keir Starmer thing of applying, you know, hindsight to it. And secondly, I'm going like, yeah, you do remember what the choice was in December of 2019. It was a party that was actually going to honour a Democratic vote. Or this old weird geezer that looked like he'd escaped from some sort of anti-Semitic allotment, right? So you're coming to me like, all of a sudden, like, no one was predicting a pandemic, were they? When the year started, no one was sitting there going, so how are our stocks of PPE? Yeah, has anyone checked that? That wasn't like a hot button issue in the election. And the Tories, this is the thing, when it all comes down in the wash, yes, the Tories have bungled quite a few things, but, you know, the furlough scheme, I think a lot of people were surprised at how generous that was. You know, maybe it should continue a bit longer. I don't know. Germany continued it till like fucking 2030 or something. But, you know, and their first instinct was to protect the NHS. They did two things that I think people would have been surprised to see them do. You know, there's a lot of people on the right that think that they slightly overprotected the NHS. You know what I mean? Because we don't want the NHS getting overwhelmed, do we? That's the thing. We can't have our NHS getting overwhelmed. NHS providing the service that it's set up to. It seems a bit nervous. Okay, let's just all have our heart attacks at home and die and let our cancers progress, because at the moment the NHS isn't in a good place. The NHS, when that crisis struck, it was like a friend suffering really bad anxiety. I was like, yeah, just give them some space. You know, things aren't great. Go, no, that's fine. That's fine. I'll just do, you know, self-medicate for the cancer then. I'm sure there's some sort of combination of cupboard herbs and spice. I'll get some sage or something. So look, I think that what most people think about the exams fiasco, catastrophe, clusterfuck, is that, yeah, on the whole, the kids probably should have been given the predicted grades in the end, but that this was not a zero-sum game. It was always going to be bad one way or the other. But the one thing the government could do, maybe, is if they think, is there a chance that we're going to shit the bed on this and do a U-turn? Okay, if so, then do it sooner rather than later.
What most people think.
Okay, just a quick hype here. A shout out first to £5 Patreons. Anne Connolly, Adam Lewis and James Farmer. What do they sound like? Lewis, Connolly and Farmer. Sound like, are they more of a solicitor's sort of thing? More the conveyance inside of it? Adam Lewis, Anne Connolly and James Farmer. Or are they like a really dynamic regional leadership team for an up-and-coming new brand. Yeah, that's who they are. You know, like one of those food things where they supply all the ingredients and stuff and they slightly charge you over the odds for it, and they basically get rid of any... I don't know if anyone has been doing those, like HelloFresh. So, yeah, they're the dynamic ones that are going around, getting everybody buzzed up. And, guys, we are going to have a conference, OK? Just when things get back to normal, we are going to have a conference. And, look, all I'm saying is Lisbon, OK? Patreon. I'll be doing more on Patreon, OK? I am... Because I had a few projects going on recently, writing projects, which I'll be able to tell you more about in the fullness of time. But I'm going to have a bit more time here, and there's some things I want to do on Patreon. I want to do... like a monthly TV show. People say to me, oh, when are you going to do like a writer center comedy show, a bit, you know, sort of like the MASH report, but for right wingers? Well, I'll be honest with you, it's never getting commissioned on, you know, any terrestrial channel. So I am in the process of putting something together. And what I'm going to do is it's going to be about 10 minutes long and it's going to be once a month, and that's going to go on Patreon. Then I'll do shorter edits for YouTube and Twitter, but the only place that you'll be able to see it is on Patreon. So do stick about for that. That should be fun. And yeah, hoping to do a bonus Patreon-only edition of the podcast next month. And also, you get, when you do Patreon, you get shout-outs. You can also, you get priority for letter reads as well, just to remind patrons that you can do that, considering I had no fucking letters this week. Confidently got my cup of tea. I thought I'll just go through this week's letters. I mean, there was like emails, but... they were mainly just blowing smoke up my arse. So, you know, obviously I cracked one out to those, but you don't necessarily want to hear that, do you? Me just spaffing one out, just reading praise back to myself. Although there was a very funny review for the podcast. I wasn't going to mention it till later, but I'll mention it now. This was a guy on the iTunes reviews who said, I love Jeff because he makes me realise why my dad says the thing he does. Jordan from Oxford. I mean, that's just brilliant, isn't it? He's basically gone... you're an old bastard like my dad. Okay, just a quick subject here. We'll talk about comedy accounts getting frozen on social media. So last week, I don't know if anybody here, you'll know Andrew Doyle. He was on like episode 3 of this podcast. And he is a very interesting political comic. But he kind of fights back against the woke as well. He's left wing, very interesting guy. And he also has this satirical account called Titania McGrath, who's kind of like the archetypal wokeist, you know, sort of spells women with an X and, you know, things you identifies as very various different things from day to day. And that account was frozen for a while, as were various other online social media accounts. And you think, well, you know, it's obviously given all the things that are happening in the world, the suspension of an online satirical comedy account isn't necessarily the worst thing. However, there is a problem with this, is that social media is increasingly becoming, you know, everyone says it's a big bit of our lives, right? And they're increasingly the arbiter for whether or not things are offensive, hurtful, rude, or intentioned. And this, the reason I choose to bring up the Titania McGrath account is that I know loads of lefties who find Titania McGrath funny. I know, I've just got to clarify. Yeah, I know, left-wingers with a sense of humour about the left wing. I tell you something, they are out there, and I'll tell you something else, some of them listen to this podcast. And what the reason that they get suspended in a while, I'd imagine, is because they get so many reports. Because I think people like... you know, people who are kind of provocative online tend to get reports. And eventually, I guess there are so many about certain accounts, is they get frozen for a while. And you know what it is? It's this little literally, I mean, some of these phrases get applied too broadly. There's a proper keyboard where I just think, I'm going to keep reporting, man. I'm going to keep reporting. Because they can't really do shit in the real world. But what they can do is just sit there with their little device, with their fucking, you know, curtains closed, just sitting there. In the gaze of their picture of fucking Che Guevara, and just try and get something that other people enjoy cancelled, right? And I guess the problem is that they, you know, there was a period maybe a few years ago where culturally the force seemed to be with them, but now there's a lot of kickback and they just don't like being the butt of the joke, right? And the problem is in comedy, is that comedians as a whole should be sticking up for these sort of accounts because it's about the right to take the piss. You know, but people in comedy don't, because then they get seen, because free speech now has somehow become like a right wing issue, you know, and the left are now more about being free from things. They've come up with this weird counter argument. I heard Layla, is it Moran or Evans, the candidate to be the new leader of Liberal Democrats? She was saying, you know, freedom isn't just free and to do things. It's about being free from things. So actually, we're the party of freedom. But is there anything that the Lib Dems are liberal about anymore? Yeah, liberal is also staying out of people's fucking business, right? Liberal is also, like, principally about live and let live. But you can't allow the parameters of taste and offence to be set online. There was a story just today about there's a mug that Sainsbury's have withdrawn, right? Because it had on it an image from the Roald Dahl book, Matilda. And it had a quote on it that says, and this is the little girl talking about her teacher saying, "I've got an idea, hit her," right? So then women's abuse charities, a few women have kind of caused this big hullabaloo online, and then Sainsbury's have withdrawn it. You know, they're obviously deeply regretful for any offence caused, whatever, because they're absolute pussies, these companies. You know, they'll take a little minor bit of outrage. And if you actually read the quote in the story, one of the spokespeople for the charities says that, well, I think they should apologise and make a huge donation. I was like, well, I think you've given your game away there when you say, I think they should make a huge donation. Could it be that that was part of... I mean, I don't know if there's ever been an abuser, and you know, counselling with an abuser anywhere that started with, well, it all started when I saw this quote on a mug from a Roald Dahl book. I mean, how do people think... This has been my... Sorry, this is going slightly off tangent here. But, you know, when you have, like, adverts or you know, celebrities saying don't do things like don't be racist or don't be a domestic abuser, right? All noble sentiments. But you just think, how many people who were thinking of it, you know, were toying with the idea of being, like, a despicable bastard on that level will go, you know what? I was going to be massively racist, but I saw this advert with David Beckham in. And he had cornrows as well. So I thought, hey, if anyone knows about race stuff, it's probably Bex, right? I think it's so much deeper than that. And that's why people who advocate free speech often aren't as fussed about messages that come out or, you know, on a slogan on a T-shirt or things in a film. Because actually, it's a more pragmatic view of human nature where you think, I think if someone is an arsehole, I think by the time they see something in a film, it's probably already too late. Do you know what I mean? Like... I think that if you're, you know, you might get ideas for how to be an arsehole, like different ways of being an absolute scumbag. But I think, you know, the fact that you're going to be a scumbag is already in the bag. And I just don't think that anybody anywhere is being influenced by slogans on mugs. I mean, I see, you know, keep calm and carry on. I don't keep calm, you know, and I barely carry on. But look, coming back to the issue of social media accounts getting frozen. I don't know how many comedians listen to this, but like, you really got to speak out, man. Because one thing we're learning about offence is that what you might be in the safe zone right now, right? The stuff that you talk about, but so were other comics not so long ago. You know, the thing about the woke is that they devour their own. And ask not who for the bell tolls, motherfucker, because eventually it may toll for thee. Okay, well, as there are literally no letters asking questions or anything this week, so I probably should do a plug for letters in future episodes, which is what most people think, uk@gmail.com. And so basically anything I've spoken about, things you agree with, things that wind you up, things you want me to talk about, hypothetical, political... Can you hear the fucking... Can you hear the dog? Oh, hang on. Lily, shut up! So, sorry about that, it was a right old tear-up. There were some dogs around the corner, so my dog was giving it large from the window because it's open, because there was these massive... Basically, it was that thing that, you know, see, why do so many tiny women have massive dogs? I know, or maybe it's like self-defence, but the problem is, it's like, what you got to remember about that dog is, as much as it could defend you, it could also get you in trouble, and it could attack you. You know, I mean, you see these kind of... these huge staffies. Everyone always defends staffies, don't they? Like, oh, staffy, yeah, lovely dog staffies. Oh, they've got such a loving nature. Yeah, equally, I've seen the news. You know, I'd rather have a dog. And then, like, staffy owners do that counterintuitive logic where they go, I tell you, some of the smallest dogs are actually the most aggressive. What are they going to do? Little Jack Russell. And mate, they feel great on the half volley, Jack Russell. I just don't understand it. I don't understand people that have loads of big dogs in their house as well. Like aggressive potential. Because what if those dogs just like communicate in dog code? They just look around and go, look at him lying on the couch all drunk and pathetic, crying at that Pixar film. Should we just fuck him up? Do you know what I mean? They go, he's always, you know what I mean? He never walks us at the right time. He's always on his phone. Should we just fuck him up? Should we just eat his face? should we just chow down on his mush? So, yeah, I don't understand it with dogs. Anyway, what the fuck was I talking about? Also, the other funny thing that never gets old is a very tall man with a tiny dog. That is just hilarious. And they always have that look, those blokes, like this wasn't their decision. You know, they're out there walking a sausage dog and they're 6'4". You're like, yeah, that wasn't your shout, was it, mate? It's like when blokes have double-barreled names against their will, and they go, "Oh yeah, yeah, I'm married to Debbie. Yeah, and I just thought, you know, it'd just easier if I took her name as well." And you go, "Did you?" Anyway, I'm going around the houses this week. Thank you if you're bearing with me. What I was going to talk about was men's mental health thing. So it is, God, slight gear change here, but it is the 5-year anniversary coming up of when my old man passed away. Did you hear the voice go there straight away?
Men, when my old man
passed away, right? And I was thinking about men and grief. You know, it's one of those things. Like me and David Baddiel. I was going to say me and David. I toyed with the idea, me and Dave last week, but we spoke about it and the ways in which grief can be more complex for men. Also, think when it comes to your dad dying, it's just less clear how you're supposed to feel, because my mum passed away. And with people's mums, it's like, you know, if you had a half-decent mum, you're going to tend emotionally more to towards your mum anyway. Oh, me old dear, you know, she was the sort of the spirit on her. She was life and stuff. There's a lot of things. Yeah. And obviously, when I grieve, I do become like a sort of 1920s Cockney. But with dads, it's less clear, isn't it? Because your dad, you know, it comes from the body. And I'm sorry if this sounds old-fashioned, but your mum, she cooked you up in her tummy. She fed you from like a tube that came into your body. Then she fed you from her tits. Like, this is all very intrinsically lodged in our minds, the connection. I mean, when women are pregnant, they exchange blood with the kid. So then they become metabolically a bit like the kid, and the kid becomes them. Let's be honest, as good a fathers, we're being better fathers in this generation. Our role in procreation, certainly in the early bit, it's not that involved, is it? I mean, it's just, it's difficult, isn't it? When your old man passes away, especially when you've got a dad like mine who was a good man. You know, he had his ups and his downs in his life, but it was complicated a lot of the time. You know, he wasn't like the kind of guy that'd take me fishing because he only had one arm. Sorry, I've always said my dad never took me fishing, and in this moment, it's the first time it occurred to me that he only had one arm. Like, he could do a lot with that arm, but I think even as a 6-year-old kid, was being unreasonable, expecting him to kind of hook a fucking maggot on a tiny little hook and then cast them there, all with one arm. But yeah, dad's roles are a lot more complex. And then the thing is, because he passed away before I was 40, I would say that 40, from my experience, is the bit where you start to understand where your same-sex parent, like, you know, if you're a son, then your dad, if you're a daughter, the mum, where they were coming from. Because all your life, you know, you sort of had your own ideas, but then you start to go, oh, yeah, that's why he was cynical about that. Or, oh, yeah, that's why he didn't trust lawyers. Oh, yeah, that's why he thought women can be full of shit. So, yeah, it's coming around and it's on my mind, isn't it? And if you're a bloke like me where you're sort of emotionally intelligent, but every once in a while you just bury stuff, it comes out in weird dreams. That's often my thing. I just wake up thinking, not like nightmares, but just like weird dreams. You think, how weird, Jeff? Like weird, like noncy weird. Of course not. But so you've got to keep tabs on it. It's not until September the 15th, which is the anniversary, but my brain often goes forward for a lot of these things. So one of the things I worked out, and I did a fair bit of counselling after I lost both my parents, was they always said to me, and my wife always says to me, and it's constructive advice, which is tell stories, right? Because what happens is after they go, you think about the sadness a lot, certainly for the first year or two, and then the sadness is you sort of remember the sadness, and all the anniversaries become a way of just... Because the sadness in a way feels good. It makes you feel closer to them. You know what I mean? And you kind of nurture it a bit. But then bit by bit, you forget the fact that you had a laugh. You know what I mean? That there were good memories there. So I'm going to tell you a story about my old man. Like, he was quite off the wall. But anyway, he liked to travel. He liked infrastructure. He liked trains. He liked things being slick. And he liked to see progress in travel. So he once took the Eurostar. I rang him up. And I said, where are you, Dad? He said, oh, I'm in Lille. And I was like, you know, for a bloke that spent most of his life in South London, I was like, well, Lille, that's a bit fancy, isn't it? I was like, what are you going to do in Lille? Are you going to go and have a jambon or a fucking croissant, you know? Or that amazing thing you have in France. You know when you have red wine in France, where you go, I'm not in France, it does taste better than at home. And it's just because you're in France. It's the shittiest red wine you ever had, but because it comes out of a fucking carafe, you're like, oh, this is good gear, isn't it? This is good gear. But anyway, I rang him up. I said, what are you doing in Lille? He said, well, you know, I just wanted to come here on the Eurostar and I'm going to come back now. I went, what do you mean come back? He goes, well, I'm going to go to the other side of the platform and wait for the Eurostar back. He went to France just for the Eurostar. And I know a lot of people go, well, you know, Eurostar is pretty cool. But he didn't even leave the station. He didn't even leave the station. His only experience of French cuisine, right, was a moody croissant from a vending machine on the platform. He also, right, his weird travel stuff, he once got, when the London Olympics was on, right, 2012, London Olympics. So he lives in South London, but it's not that far to get, and it's a pain in the arse journey from south west to east, but it's the only time in his life that he's going to be able to go to the Olympics. Did he go to the Olympics? Well, he got the train to the Olympics because he's heard that the bullet train from central London to Stratford, he liked the name of it, the bullet train. So again, got the train there, came back. Didn't, like, he didn't even go into the Olympic Park. He didn't even, he just come back. You know, got, when I went to Stratford, oh, what'd you do there? Did you go to the velodrome? Did you try and get tickets to the dressage? No, I just sat on the train and I came back. Yeah, so a very slick operation, that bullet train. And then I think maybe like the best one ever was it, because I lived with him for a while. And he was one, you know, they get to that age where they get up so fucking early. Do you know what I mean? And one day he had a weird thing with timekeeping anyway. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, but he had this phrase about being punctual. He always have to get it right because it's such a weird phrase. He said, early is on time, punctual is late. So just give you a second just to breathe that in there. Early is on time, right? So being early is actually being on time. And being on time, punctual, is late. You wonder why I need fucking therapy. Anyway, so I got up. I was living with him and he wasn't up. And that was very rare because he was normally up by like 5 a.m. smoking Old Hoban, you know what I mean? Drinking the strongest Dow Egberts coffee known to man with the radio on. And he came downstairs kind of looking a bit dishevelled. And I said to him, what's going on with you, Dad? What did you do last night? He said, I drove around the M25. And it, like, I just went, oh, right, okay. And I thought, like, he'd done it, you know, he'd done a mission to help a mate, you know, like your old man does, like drops off a fucking cupboard somewhere or something, you know, for that generation of people that don't, not like us where it's all disposable, we just go and buy another one, right? They'll actually do like a 40-minute drive just to pick up like a shoe rack. And I looked at him. And I just knew it was going to be weird. I was like, what do you mean round the M25? He went, yeah, round it. I started off at Junction 9 for the A3. And I just went all the way around it, over Dartford Tunnel, round up through Essex, North London, stopped at the South Mems, and came round the other way. And I was like, wow. He said, well, yeah, I've just always wanted to do it. And I said, well, what was it like, Dad? He said, well, you know, it's like a pretty much like a normal motorway, but you end up back in the same place. Tales of Jeff Norcott's dad there to bring us to the end of the show. Maybe that whole M25 thing was like a metaphor, guys? Maybe it was. Maybe life is circular. We've got £3 of Patreons here. Joe White, Michael Hinchcliffe and Chris Kimpton. That is a power indie band, isn't it? A little three-piece there. And it probably a bit Pretty Boys there. They just sound good looking, don't they? Joe White, Michael Hinchcliffe and Chris Kimpton. I bet Chris Kimpton be the one with the girly hair in the boy band. You know the one that all the girls like at the beginning and then as they become 28. You know, like with Take That, all the girls like Mark to begin with, didn't they? Because he looked pretty and there was something about teenage girls that they didn't want like intimidating masculinity. And then it was Robbie because he had a glint in his eye and that was when they, you know, they were going on girls' holidays and stuff and maybe they had a bit of liberty in their life. But by the end of it all, they all want a Gary Barlow, don't they? They want a bloke who's financially secure and looks like he could wire a plug. So sorry, Chris Kimpton. At the end of the day, it's going to be Michael Hinchcliffe who's going to settle well and you'll probably be going to the Priory. You just do some reviews because, as ever, if you leave me a review of my podcast, I've got, because of my new laptop, nothing is where it's supposed to be. Why do they just move stuff? Oh, let's do a fucking update of iTunes here. Let's take everything that anybody ever knew and make it confusing. I don't know where reviews are. I'm going to have to read them off the phone. Now I sound like my old man, don't I? Oh, I don't know where the stuff's gone. I'm going to have to read it in a really technologically unevolved way. I'm going to have to go into my own phone, scroll down, and let's see what we've got here. This is Ian from Croydon. Three Lions. Jeff, love the David Baddiel pod. Not too much smoke up the arse. Maybe a slim panatella. Very disappointed as a true South London boy. You didn't end the pod with a Three Lions duet. All the best, Ian. I mean, look, Ian, I would have loved to have done that, but whatever, rapport I tried to build up with David Baddiel. Can you imagine if I'd gone, just David, before you go here, I just thought it'd be kind. Him just sitting in his house with his headphones on, me sitting there. Everyone seems to know the score. I could sing Frank Skinner's weird little bit. And this was already read out the review from Jordan, which is what my dad definitely thinks. 50th show was class, mate. This is from GusBoy51. I've listened to them all and they never disappoint. Congratulations on the 50th. What a great guest in David Baddiel. Yeah, David Baddiel has gone down very well here. From Harvey Frogboy, very good, as he says. Keeping me sane. I discovered this podcast at the beginning of lockdown and it has helped. It has helped me keep me sane. I'm a £5 patron and will increase to £10 using money saved from cancelling various mainstream media. Well, listen, man, there's a lot of people are saying that. That's a worry, isn't it? Amount of people that are just going, you know what? I've said this actually this week. Sorry, I shouldn't be getting into this right at the end, but I'm saying this to a lot of people in television and at the BBC, is that the lack of political representation in comedy is an issue, isn't it? Because people are going, well, I don't want to hear, you know, I understand that the satirical fire has to go from who to who's in power, but I don't think every single bit of it has to go there, you know. We could always just do with a little bit back the other way. And, you know, maybe, am I actually making a point here? Or is this just me yet again coming around to the idea that I should have my own show?
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.